it's Canzano. Thanks for making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe and leave us some feedback. Also, the podcast is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic, dedicated to providing breakthrough, non-invasive, drug-free solutions to ED problems. Call Multnomah Medical Clinic at 503-899-4199 or visit them online at multnomahmedical.com.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
Well, we had Coach Jason Brown on this radio show a while back, and it was a wildly popular interview segment. He had a lot to say. He knows a lot about the inner workings of recruiting and coaching and kids and life, and you may have seen him on Netflix, Last Chance U. Coach Jason Brown joining us on the show. How are you, Coach?
I'm good, John. I'm good. You hear me good?
Yep, I got you loud and clear. Where are you right now? Where are you today? Are you in Texas, or where are you?
No, I'm in L.A. I'm in California.
All right. So what are you up to lately? Yeah. People want to know, what's happened to Jason Brown?
Man, you know, I launched my own whiskey and cigar line August 1st, and that's it's taken off, actually, and done quite well online. We're online right now, but we're trying to get it into, we already have distributors ready to go and push it. We had to sell a certain amount first to prove our worth, I guess, in the business. And now we're getting close to that, and then we'll be nationwide in liquor stores, hopefully Bedmo, Total Wine, Trader Joe's, that type of stuff as well. So it's been a grind, man. Just like anything you want to be successful at, I guess you know, if you think it's going to be handed to you, you got another thing coming, so you got to go turn over a rock, like I like to say, and figure things out and go hustle and find a way to get it pushed. So I've been pushing the whiskey and cigar line actually quite a bit. So that's what I've been doing mostly, plus the podcast and still my book, doing my book deal. And I've been doing a few Zoom meetings, online clinics, and spoke to a sports media class at Rider University on the East Coast. Great deal. And I'm starting to do that a little more with some universities. So just hanging in there.
You know, some people loved you from the show. Some people didn't like you. Obviously, you're comfortable with who you are and how you coach. Do you regret being part of the Netflix Last Chance U series, or was that good for you?
You know what? I don't know. I don't know if I can answer that until my story's been written, I guess, so to speak, if that makes sense. You know, I don't know. I accepted it. I don't ever look in the rearview mirror because I'm not headed that way. So I really don't like to look back, but I accepted it. I had the broad enough shoulders to accept it. And I just, you know, I can sit there and cry over spilled milk or accept it and suck it up like a big boy and put my hard hat on and work boots and attack the next day and you know, prep tomorrow today. And, I think I'm doing that and having to get over it regardless of my true feelings on if the show depicted me in the right manner or not. You know, obviously everyone that judges me, none of them know me. It's just a lot of these keyboard cowards out there who judge you for what you were on a show for 16 hours of your life, when actuality they filmed me for 30 something hundred hours, and you know, there's things that are missing. So they had to get the ratings. I had the producer on my podcast, which was a huge show for myself, obviously, having Greg Whiteley on my podcast, and I brought that up. I said, "Do you think you depicted me in the right manner?" And I said it in a way where I said, "You know, we've already discussed this off the air, Greg." And I said, "You know, I know what your answer is. You know what my thoughts are, but you know, let the world know." And so, you know, we talked it out, and you know, I thought there was things that could have been shown. You know, the Nick Sabans and the head coaches that would come in my office and tell me how well my program was ran and how it was the best junior college structured environment they've ever seen and how well-mannered my kids are and how my reputation perceives itself when it comes to those kids succeeding at the next level and beyond and getting their degrees. That wasn't shown. I wish that would have been shown. But I do understand it's Hollywood. You got to make great ratings. And you know, I ended up in some people's light that, you know, a guy that runs around Walmart cussing out little babies. It is what it is.
Coach Jason Brown, our guest. I want to pepper you with questions about college football. Mike Leach goes into the SEC and beats LSU. What'd you make of that?
I expected it. I thought so. I called it. Said it on my podcast. I told people I was tired of hearing this SEC stuff. You couldn't throw the football in the SEC, blah, blah, blah. Just so everybody's clear, the starting quarterback will be at Alabama. It's from Southern California. A Southern California native just went in at LSU and broke the SEC all-time leading record, passing record at 630 yards. The starting quarterback at South Carolina is a Southern California native. The starting quarterback at West Virginia is a Southern California native. People give this narrative that that West Coast systems cannot come into the SEC. Mike Leach did this already in the 90s. Tim Couch was the number one draft pick. He didn't have a great NFL career, obviously, just like a lot of NFL quarterbacks don't have careers when they're great in college. But he's already done it, and he averaged 600 yards of offense in the SEC at Kentucky. So, I mean, I didn't think it couldn't happen. I knew it would happen. And I just think if you have an equivalent playing field with the same talent, you can run any scheme. Because coaching's overrated, like I think I said on your show last year. Yeah. Players win games, coaches lose them. And I don't care if you run wing T, double wing, triple option, spread it out, air raid. If you got dudes, Jimmys and Joes, it ain't about X's and O's. So do you think that Mike, just so you know, Mike Leach calls, he has a card. Maybe obviously my receiver was his best receiver at Washington State. And I have kids that played for him and coaching buddies that coach for him. You know, he's called that, used that card for a long, long time. And everything has some type of nine route, fade route built into it, regardless, you know, based on coverage. Do you think the Osiris kid was just, you know, do you think he made Mike Leach look good, or did Mike Leach make him look good? I mean, dude ran by this SEC corner every snap, and he had a 200-something yard receiving. You call a play, kid makes the play. I mean, you can call the play, and the kid's wrapped up and covered, and they don't make no play. And then what? Leach looks horrible, they look horrible. The kid dominated the line of scrimmage with that corner, and 630 yards were thrown on him. I think it's going to be a normal thing. I don't think he does that to Alabama or a couple schools, Florida, but I do think it's going to be hard to beat. And Mike Leach will scheme you, and I think he's got dudes, and I think he put SEC on watch because every receiver in America is going to want to go to Mississippi State.
Coach Jason Brown, our guest, you're right there where USC is, and I'm curious to know what you think of USC sticking with Clay Helton. What's the issue at USC? They can't get their act together.
Well, they snapped Dante from your area, a good friend of mine, coaching buddy of mine. Dante Williams came back home. Yep. That'll help. It already has helped. They've done a little better already, just with the addition of Dante. You know, I got friends there, man. You know, I don't know. I, the bigger issue to me is why it took you and your publicist a week or two to come out with a statement when the Black Lives Matter issue happened. That's what hurts. That's what bothers me, because let's be honest, this is a sport played by 90% of black kids, and it's coached by 90% white guys. And we go into these homes and recruit these kids and tell their parents this, this, and that, and we're going to take care of you. We're going to get you to the next level. We're going to do this, this, and that. And it ends up being a lot of BS from a lot of these guys. And, you know, some people can say, well, you're killing your future, JB. Well, you know what? I'm sorry. I'm always going to tell the truth, because I've always been about those kids first. And if you don't hire me because I speak the truth, so be it. I'll do something else. But at the end of the day, it's about those babies. And, you know, the definition of coaching is getting the kid where he could not get himself. I don't believe coaches at that level think that way. I think they're about getting themselves where they want to get themselves. And it's about money. Money talks and BS walks. And it's unfortunate to me if you're at a place like USC, inner city, South Central Los Angeles. I just know this much. Pete Carroll would have been there. They would have had sweatsuits on and SC gear and been walking down Figueroa in March the same day, not took 2 weeks to make a statement. And just so you, just to be fair, Dabo Sweeney took 2 weeks. Yeah. Nick Saban took 2 weeks. All kind of coaches took a lot of time. And just to me, it blows my mind. I would have made a statement right then. I didn't need a publicist to write my statement for me, if you're honest and genuine. And I just think kids need to understand where you're going. And every day is an interview. And I think you got to be the CEO of yourself. And your parents need to help you do make the best decision possible when you're picking these schools and these coaches that you're supposedly going to play for and give your all to. And it's proven that SC hasn't done a very good job of that, because players are obviously seeing through it and choosing to go elsewhere. And that's just what's happened. And Dante can only do so much as an assistant. As you know, the head coach is still going to be the figurehead of that program, and kids and parents are going to want to go to where that guy is. Is Clay Helton the guy? I just don't think he fits the L.A. mold.
How about Chip Kelly? Because I hear some of the same stuff there. I think Chip Kelly needs somebody like you on his shoulder helping him.
Yeah, me and Chip aren't greatest friends, but, you know, same deal. I got good friends on that staff now. It's same deal. I mean, look how long it took him to make a statement. It's unfortunate, man. I mean, I don't understand how you can be in L.A. and not have the best talent, at least in the Pac-12. Let's just be honest. At least in the Pac-12, it's not the country. You know, Pete Carroll didn't lose against SEC teams, and SEC teams, I tried to say the other day to somebody, were really irrelevant. You know, Florida won a few when Carroll left. LSU won one. But Nick didn't get rolling until, and a good friend of mine who's a coordinator in the SEC, I said, man, why is SEC, why has Nick Saban been so successful? And he said, because Pete Carroll's in the NFL. And I won't say no names, but that's a true statement, and I believe that. I truly do. They made the text message rule because of Pete Carroll. They made the head coaches out to high school rule because of Pete Carroll. All those things were made because of Pete Carroll. And he turned over rocks and used L.A. to his benefit. He brought Snoop Dogg in. He brought Debo from Friday in. He brought these people in, Will Ferrell. You know, that's, kids wanted to see that stuff, man. Especially the kid from Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, when he went in there and grabbed your best player, your number one recruit in that state, and took him to L.A. That's not happening. We're losing our number one players and taking out of L.A. So that is the complete opposite of what USC used to be, what the Terry Donahue UCLA teams used to be. I mean, L.A., just so you know, UCLA for a stretch there was the SC as far as the talent. I mean, UCLA had the dudes, we call them in the neighborhood, the dogs, the Bruce Walkers and the, you know, all Jameer Millers and all these dudes, Arbuckles, all these dudes that were coming to LA, UCLA at that time were the dudes. And that was a run. So you can't tell me it can't happen. I understand administrative change. I understand GPA platforms get set higher, you know, higher standards. But you still got to be able to recruit a kid. And if that kid wants to come, him and his parents will figure a way to come. And it's not happening.
Coach Jason Brown, our guest, you've seen him on Netflix, Last Chance U. He's got a book out. He's got a cigar line out as well. He's got a podcast. You can find him on Twitter at The Real Coach JB. Oregon and Oregon State are different animals. Oregon's got the facilities. It's got the relationship with Nike. Oregon State is really trying to reach into its own history with Jonathan Smith and say, look, you know, we can be a real family. They have different challenges recruiting-wise. What advice would you give to Oregon State as it tries to keep pace with Oregon?
You know, Jonathan's a good dude, man. I've known him a long time. He spoke with me for me at some clinics of mine when I was a head coach. He's a Glendora, Southern California guy, great offensive-minded guy. He did great things at Washington, obviously, Montana. He's been all over the place and done great things, right? And, you know, Oregon State, man, you've got that old, outdated bubble indoor practice facility. You're kind of the stepchild, 45 minutes, you know, north of Eugene. And you're in a town, you know, what you have going is what? The Nike Sparks Combine. You got Nike Town there, whatever. You got some things in Corvallis or in that area, but you have to be able to to, it's easy to be average, man. You got to be, it's hard to be different. And I think they're going to have to separate themselves and think outside the box when it comes to recruiting and use Oregon's, fortunes against them, so to speak. And I would be, that's what I would be doing, because I was an outside the box thinker when it came to recruiting, but I would be using Nike, the uniforms, all that stuff against them. And, you know, not giving away too many secrets of mine, but I would be, you know, like, you want to use 1,000 uniforms and wear 1,000 uniforms and be known as 1,000 different things? Or do you want to be known as, you know, an orange and black team that we rock this every week and we have one alternate uni, but we're going to be who we are every single week and that we're going to get you where you couldn't get yourself. Right now, you know, Oregon hasn't won in quite some time. They're getting better and all that, but you can argue the Pac-12 is so down that you're still an average team at the top of the Pac-12 when it comes to a national scale. So you got to be different, man, when it comes to recruiting. And the bottom line is the kid has to believe in you, or it don't matter where you are. You know, I was the head coach at Compton College. We had a dirt track and dirt field and glass in the field, and I had 8 NFL players on my team. So, I mean, it doesn't matter about facilities at the end of the day. I don't. If someone says facilities is the reason you can't get a kid, you're just a weak-minded, lazy recruiter.
I love what you say about Oregon State kind of finding its identity. I immediately thought about, like, Penn State's uniforms back in the day. Very simple, basic, substance-driven. I think, it would be a good correction.
Yeah. I mean, you don't need all that stuff.
Coach, before I cut you loose, you know, obviously there's, you know, pandemic going on and everybody's talking about the Pac-12, you know, joining the party late and playing. And if the Pac-12 had not played, how much of a recruiting deficit are they in? Or will kids view that as, oh, wow, they really care about athletes. You know, they put the athletes first. Or is that nonsense?
It's all nonsense, man. Chase the money. Follow the money. This is the thing about it. And I said it, and I, you know, I got Coy Dang at Cal, who was a leading tackler in the Pac-12 last year, and I got Calvin Jackson at Washington State and Chad Davis at Washington State. And I want to see my kids play. You know, I had Jermaine Johnson, the DN at Georgia, play against Rakeem Boyd, the starting running back at Arkansas. They played each other last week. I want to see those guys. But I want to see them in varsity football. This is JV football. We've had 100 kids opt out, 50 top draft picks opt out, over 45 All-Americans opt out. Your starting left tackle at Oregon's opted out. The quarterback at Georgia. The tackle at Ohio State. These are guys that people don't understand. One guy, they make a huge difference in your program. And when the kids came out and wanted all these demands, the issue I had with the demands was, not to be long-winded, they wanted to control coaches' salaries. Pac-12 is already the lowest paid Power 5 program coaching staff in the country. They're already the lowest paid. Kids shouldn't be controlling coaching salaries. That's part of this enabled generation of kids that we have now anyway. Kids tell you what they know, and it should be their way. And it's like, hold up, you haven't paid a mortgage, a car note, anything yet. You know what you know and don't know what you don't know. When the kids stop that movement, when the Big Ten and the Pac-12, both of those players were the two leading movement guys saying we want these changes before we come back and play, all of a sudden when the NCAA said no, when the Pac-12 and Big Ten said we're not going to play this year, that went away. That's the problem I have, and it went to hashtag we want to play. So you either stand for something or fall for anything, man. And I just think when the kids did that, they lost their leverage. I think now they just want to play, and I think it's become a joke. It's a mockery. It's not about the health and well-being of these kids. The Pac-12 and Scott and the Big Ten found out real quick they're losing billions of dollars, and they know they understand that football makes their colleges operate on a yearly basis. I don't care if it's computer labs, libraries, or what. And they found out, uh-oh, we're going to take a hit. Those presidents got them on the horn, and they said, we need football back. Because if not, why did you make the statement and cancel just a month and a half ago? You put your foot in your mouth, I think, too early. And I think they now look even worse than they had. And I hate it, man. I'm a West Coast guy. I'm a California guy. People think I hate. But no, I'm telling the truth. And I want to see my kids play, too, but not at the risk of of a coach that makes millions of dollars that has no real invested interest in these babies, because that's what it really is. And that's the sad part. And we can talk about this forever. And I know you have a show to run, so I won't. But, you know, it's a reward versus the risk deal. And I believe the risk outweighs the reward in college football right now during this pandemic. It's not the other way around. There's no reward that I can see coming out of this deal, but college is getting money back and players losing everything.
Coach Jason Brown, I appreciate you, man. Keep doing what you do.
Hey, I appreciate you guys.
All right, there he is. Jason Brown, you've seen him on Netflix, Last Chance U, and other places. I want you to leave it here statewide. You got the Bald Face Truth on the BFT Radio Network. You missed the interview with Coach Jason Brown. Grab the podcast. Good stuff from him. We had him on last year. He's controversial. He's a lightning rod. He's opinionated. He is authentic. I think there's a place for him in college football. He was at the community college ranks where he was putting kids into four-year programs and into the NFL. A lot of people didn't like him on the Netflix Last Chance U series. I like a lot of what he had to say on the show. The biggest thing that jumped out to me was his comments about Oregon State. See, Oregon State, I think, gets caught a little bit in this dilemma of they've got Nike. There are some Nike dollars available to them. Certainly, they're a Nike school. They're not on the level of Oregon. Oregon has an elite relationship with Nike, very unique relationship with Nike. And as a result of that, Oregon, you know, becomes this product testing ground, even on campus in Eugene, for Nike products. The football team, we all know, looks cooler than just about anything else that you see on a football field, and was way ahead of its time. I love what he said, though, about Oregon State kind of becoming, you know, we're going to wear black and orange. We are going to have one uniform. We are not going to have, you know, all the bells and whistles, but you're going to be part of something bigger than yourself mentality. They're already kind of selling that, but they're also kind of dabbling in trying to look cool on the field. And I think probably somebody in the football operations department is saying, you know, we've got to have new helmets, got to have new jersey. This is what kids love. This helps us recruit. I like some of what he said. And if you're at USC or UCLA, get this guy on your staff. Chip Kelly, get this guy on your staff. Get him on your staff and start recruiting Los Angeles again. And you can tell me that the demo...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.